In the middle of St. Peter's Square this Christmas, a life-size nativity scene that has many heads turning for a double take. This year, the scene is set in Nazareth, not Bethlehem, a surprise for many pilgrims. But Christian art historian Elizabeth Lev told me that's the point. It's supposed to get you thinking.
It opens your eyes and makes you think. You know, every year you put out the same images, you think in the same terms, and we're all expecting more or less the same scene with slight variations. But this time the scene is completely different. We'll find ourselves looking into Joseph's house in Nazareth. We'll see the room, one room in which the nativity takes place, Joseph, Mary, Jesus, four angels standing in the back. And then off to the left, you'll have his office, his workshop. You'll see the tools of the of Joseph's trade as a carpenter. And then on the right-hand side, another little surprising element is that there's going to be a little osteria, a little tavern scene with people sitting around, eating, drinking, a representation of a communal life. And so there's a lot going on. This is probably one of the most thought-out nativity scenes we've ever had at St. Peter's.
It's taken from the Gospel of Matthew. How in the Gospels have we seen the recounting of the story of Jesus' birth? It's really just St. Luke who tells us the whole story of Bethlehem and how Christ is born in a humble stable.
First of all, I think it's necessary to be precise that the Gospel of Matthew starts, it's chapter 2, verse 1, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem. So the Gospel of Matthew does not say that Jesus was born in Nazareth. It maintains the same line as the Gospel of St. Luke, that Jesus was born in Bethlehem. However, the Gospel of Matthew in relation to the Gospel of St. Luke, yes, ordinarily the story of the Nativity takes place generally drawn mostly from the Gospel of St. Luke. Although the wise men, who are a necessary part of it, come from the story of St. Matthew. So he's already there, the presence of St. Matthew. This year, we've increased the presence of Matthew in that the Gospels really do, and John Paul II told us this in his apostolic exhortation on Joseph, which he gave in 1989. He tells us that the two Gospels together tell us the story. Matthew and Luke complement each other the same way Mary and Joseph complement each other in being the parents of Jesus. And so to get back to what they're trying to depict, it's not a reinterpretation of the gospel, but it is an emphasis on the role of Joseph in the story of the Nativity of Christ.
It sounds like they've taken inspiration here from Matthew's, the part in the gospel where he's talking about the angel appearing to Joseph and telling Joseph, the child that Mary is carrying is the Messiah. Take her as your wife. So it's really, in a way, it's Joseph being the second yes, in a way, to Jesus. Mary says yes to the angel Gabriel. Yes, I will accept this great burden, carrying the Christ child into the world. Joseph, another yes. In a way, it's asking all of us that we're all supposed to be saying yes to Jesus based on our faith.
So that's an excellent, excellent point. The parallel annunciations, I think, is a very big part of what this nativity scene is trying to draw out. That there was a yes that we celebrate, we know, we emphasize, we see it everywhere from the Pietà to the nativity scene. The yes of Mary, we know all the time. But this year, we think about the yes of Joseph and the yes of men and the yes of women to the family. Again, the thing that I find very striking and extremely important about this nativity scene is the incredible emphasis they are placing on the family, the role of the family, and that Joseph, who has not one but four dreams in the Gospel of Matthew, he becomes the messenger through whom the angels come to Joseph, God's will is expressed to Joseph, and Joseph takes control of what the family will do, where they will go, what will happen to them. And he becomes, because of that marriage to Mary, juridically, he is the father of Jesus. And we see this man, woman, and the child and the family that grows together, participating in actively, most completely, most closely in God's plan for salvation.
There's some very interesting symbolism also in this nativity scene, isn't there? You have water, you have fire, you have everyday chaos of the people at the little tavern and so on. You have the quiet family life. There's a lot going on in this nativity scene.
I think a lot of these, of course, the sacramental significance of water, fire, and all of the tremendous number of things that fire draws to our mind, from the Holy Spirit to the Passion, the active and the contemplative, which is the sort of juxtaposition of the busy tavern scene with the meditative family around the Christ child, all of these different, almost dual natures, they seem conflicting, the quiet and the noisy, the fiery and the quenching. But at the same time, that's, I think, the secret to this scene. The Nativity is the most momentous birthday in the history of humanity. It is the most important birthday ever. And that birthday, like a diamond, has so many different facets, so many different meanings. If you look in the history of art, in many ways artists have tried to draw this out throughout history. Sometimes you see a nativity scene where there's crumbling Roman ruins in the background, where they talk about the end of one pagan civilization and the rise of the new Christian civilization. There have been many ways that artists over the years have tried to bring out different facets of the Nativity. But this year, in this day and age, in this very troubled world, particularly, as you know, the issue of family is on every day on the table, this is a beautiful response and a very positive, life-affirming, loving response to represent the Nativity.
Now, you've mentioned the angels. We know that this year the angels were donated by Mexico in this nativity scene. Where are the other figures coming from? Some of them are ones that we've seen in past years, aren't they?
Some of them are actually the province of Trento up in northern Italy has contributed quite a few of these figures. Some of the figures come from the Church of Sant'Andrea della Valle, which is the Theatine Church in downtown Rome, very near the Gesù, built in the 17th century. And it's part of a collection of figures that were put together in 1820. By St. Vincent Paleotti. So we have, again, that wonderful pulling together of all these different images, all of these different figures, so that in St. Peter's, in the embrace of St. Peter's Colonnade, the whole world comes together to celebrate this event.
Is what we're seeing then with this nativity scene in St. Peter's Square, is this anything new?
Well, for a nativity scene, the figurines placed out in the typical creche scene, this has not been seen, at least in modern times. But the idea of really putting side by side, reading the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Luke side by side to better understand the story of the Nativity is something you find perhaps most beautifully expressed in the Church of St. Mary Major here in Rome, where those 5th century mosaics, they go all the way down the aisles with these patriarchs who are promised they have a covenant with God, and the triumphal arch above the altar has the fulfillment of this covenant with the mosaics of the birth of Christ, the infancy of Christ. And up at the top, you see Mary and Joseph side by side. On the left is the Annunciation, on the right is the Annunciation to Mary, on the left is the Annunciation to Joseph, surrounded by angels. The idea of the Holy Family and the dual Annunciations, the house of Mary and the house of Joseph that are facing each other. Mary's house is closed because of virginity, but Joseph's door is open, so that already we see in the church this desire to read these stories together. And that's what I think makes this nativity scene so unique and special for our times. First of all, who is it celebrating? It's celebrating Joseph, which of course is the baptismal name of Pope Benedict XVI, so very much in honor of our Pope. Joseph, who, like his great Old Testament predecessor, Joseph, both dreamers. Joseph of the Old Testament, able to interpret the dreams. Joseph of the New Testament, who talks to God through the dreams, or is giving these messages through these dreams. Joseph of the Old Testament, who was made administrator of the Pharaoh's goods, and Joseph, who, of course, was made administrator or caretaker of the most important goods, God's greatest goods, which are Jesus and Mary. And I think what's been so beautiful about this is that ever since this piece of information was dropped on me. And I've been talking about this with my friends and the people I know, and everybody is so excited to talk about it because it gives us the possibility to think of the Nativity in a whole new way. And that's what makes this so magnificently Pope Benedict's Nativity scene, because it's a teaching Nativity, a possibility to rethink and relearn meanings and lessons from the birth of Christ.
Elizabeth Lev is a professor of Christian art and architecture at Duquesne University.